All glories to the assembled devotees.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Panaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutalai. Srimate Bhakti Vinata Swami Nati Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pachani Nivasesa Sanyani Bhaskachari Satyani Vindeham Sri Guru Sri Tapadam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahaganam Radhatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvaditam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Radhita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's April 12, 2009 in Auckland, and we are now finishing the Upadeshamrita. Texts 9, 10, and 11. And if you have a book, you can read the verses together. These are little top verses. Okay, text 9. You can say it all together. Vaikuntaj janito varak marupari tatrapi ratso tsavad vrindaranyam udarapani ramanata trapi govardana radha kundami hapiko kulaipate preman rita plavanat puryad asyagra ajito giritate sevam viveki naka.
The holy place known as Mathura is, get together, is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathura Puri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavana because of Krishna's Rasalila pastimes. And superior to the forest of Vrindavana is Govardhan Hill, who was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super excellent tree Radhakund stands supreme, but is over flooded with the ambrosial nectarian prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where then is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radhakund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? Text 10.
Karmibhya parito harer priyataya vyakim vayor gyaninas tebhyo gyana vimukta bhakti parama premai kanistastata tebhyasta pasupala pankaja dristastabhyo pisaradika prestatavadiyam tadiya sarasi tamnashrayet kapriti.
In the Shastra, it is said that of all types of fruitive workers, he who is advanced in knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. Out of many such people who are advanced in knowledge, Gyanis, one who is practically liberated by virtue of his knowledge may take to devotional service. He is superior to the others. However, one who has actually attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her Kunda lake is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radhakund and in a spiritual body surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings of Prakriti Bhava render loving service to the divine couple Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Astaka Lila Lila, their eightfold daily pastimes. Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radhakunda are the most fortunate people in the universe. Text 11.
Krishna yocha pranaya vasati prayasi vyopi radha kundam chasya munibir atibhistadrig eva vyadadi yat prestar api alam masulabam kim punar bhakti bhajam tat premadam sakritapi saras matur avishkaroti.
Of the many objects of favored delight, and of all the lovable damsels of Rajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. In every respect, her divine kunda is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radhakunda is very rarely attained, even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. So by the grace of Kalasambhara Prabhu, we are all going to take a bath in Radhakund. Maybe some of you thought I brought hairspray to class or something. So if we could, let's do the ladies first. Something. just give everyone a little spray on the head, and then if you could give it over to that side of the room. You ever seen any kind of surveys? What's the best place to live? You ever seen anything like that? What are the best places to live on the planet? They'll talk about what kind of things do people consider when they consider what are the best places to live?
Hawaii.
Safety. Yeah, low crime rate. What?
Hawaii.
Hawaii. How do people choose Hawaii? What are the criteria?
Climate,
okay. So safety, crime rate, and then climate.
Project income.
Income, okay, what else? How much money you can make there? What's the cost of living? Not only how much money can you make, just like in New York City you can make a lot of money, but it's going to cost you $3,000 a month for a studio. You know what a studio is? Just one room, no bedroom, in a bad part of town. Okay, crime, climate, income, anything else people look at?
Access.
Right, well, like Hawaii and New Zealand are not very accessible. If you come here and stay, that's okay. But if you want to go anyplace, it's a little difficult. What else do people look at? Nice place to stay. Best places to live.
Neighborhood.
Neighborhood. Okay, what kind of people live there? What else people look at? Not too many parents here in the audience. Schools! Where is there a good school? Okay, not only income, how far you have to drive to work. They have a whole formula how to calculate quality of life. And then people are also interested in where is the best place for me? You know, San Diego may be the best place theoretically, but is that the best place for me, for example? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe that place doesn't quite fit with my particular needs. So would all of us like to live in the place that was best for us? Everybody all like to do that? What about who's the best person? When you went to school, do they have contests to choose who was the best person? Didn't you have those sort of contests? Who was like the prom queen or who was, you know, the president of the class? Didn't you do that kind of thing? Who was the most popular, who was the most this, who was the most that. Did we only do that in America? You guys are much more egalitarian and you know, do that in the part of the world you come from. But we try to figure out who's the best person. Right? What are different grades of persons? And when you were young, probably your parents said to you, I want you to be a success. Didn't they want you to be a success? Any of you have parents who said, I want you to grow up to be a failure? I'm sorry, we'll give you counseling after the class. But generally, you know, parents and community, they want you to be a success. They want you to be the best person that you can possibly be. The other day I was at some devotee's house, and they were asking me about a particular school, or people often ask me about the school here, and they'll say, people from other parts of the world, and they say, is it a good school? Now, in order to answer, I used to answer questions like that. I don't answer questions like that anymore. Why would I not answer a question like that? Yes, different people have different idea of what good is. Or even if someone says, is it a Krishna conscious school? People have a very different idea in their mind. What is a Krishna conscious school? Some people in their mind, Krishna conscious school means everyone's just studying like the Atharva Veda all day long. Do you follow? So if we want to be the best person or we want to associate with the best persons, if we want to live in the best place, we have to have some idea how to judge what's best. That make sense? How do you know? I mean, those things we were looking at, the first things that people said were safety and climate. Interesting, huh? I used to say air was the most essential physiological need, but you know, we can live without air for I think maybe 5 to 10 minutes. Sometimes 20 in unusual circumstances. But how long can you live in severe heat or cold? That's it, you know? If it's hot enough, your body's incinerated. Oof. Or cold enough. So our greatest physiological need is temperature. And then safety. Well, you know, nobody wants to be stabbed or shot. So when we're looking in this material world for the best place to live, the first criteria we're looking at is just keeping the body alive. Where can I live? Where can I have life with this body? And income, again, we're thinking about where can I get food? Where can I get shelter? We're thinking in terms of just living for the body. But maybe that's not exactly what the best criteria is. We should keep in mind that this section of the Upadeshamrita is at the end, of course, and it's dealing with the goal of life. It's dealing with the goal of life. So if we haven't yet gotten the first verse together, what was the first verse? Vacho vegam, manasakrota vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam. This devotee just put out a thing on his Facebook thing. I feel like punching a whole bunch of people in the face. So, you know, if you regularly feel like punching a bunch of people in the face, then you just look at these 9 through 11 verses from a distance. Okay, is that clear? So if we can't control our mind, if we can't control our anger, if we can't control our speech, if we can't control our belly, then we know, okay, this is my goal. Right? Is everybody with me on that? First, you have to control your senses, and you have to refrain from the negative things and accept the positive things. Anybody remember what some of the negative things are one has to give up? Over-endeavor for mundane things. We talked about that payasa, how devotional service shouldn't be payasa kind of endeavor. What else should one give up? Prajalpa. Associating with worldly-minded people, which is stated in both the positive and negative, Janasangha and Sangha Tyaga. And what else should one give up? Rest. Or not following the rules and regulations. So either not following them or following them superficially. Yes? I'm going to say the same thing. Okay. All right, and what should one do? What are some of the things we should do? Associate with devotees, and particularly follow in the footsteps of devotees. I was just hearing a class yesterday where Prabhupada translated that verse as one should earn an honest livelihood. Maybe he got that from Tat Karma, but that was interesting. In fact, one leader in our movement was just telling me how in certain parts of the world, it's almost impossible to earn an honest livelihood. Half of the expenditures are bribes. And if you say, if you don't live like that, you can't do any projects there. And so what are some of the other positives? Enthusiasm. And enthusiasm is not just like, but it's action executed with intelligence and Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said. It's doing something. What else?
Patience.
Just enthusiasm is the mode of passion, and just patience is the mode of ignorance. You got to have both. You're going to be both enthusiastic and patient. And what else?
Confidence.
That means faith. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mostly explains confidence as faith. I have to believe that I'm going to get where I'm going to get. We all have that kind of faith. I would assume that pretty much everyone here has been on an airplane. I think people who stay in New Zealand generally have been on an airplane. That's not true everywhere in the world. So you have some faith that you pay your money. Nowadays you have faith that you go on the internet, you just type some little numbers into a box, and that means you're going to end up, you know, in Brisbane. So some faith, some confidence. What are other positive things? Residing in a holy place, yes, although that's in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Determination is like enthusiasm. Enthusiasm, confidence put together. One has to follow the regulative principles. Okay? And then what do you do? So now you've got your own life together. You've controlled your senses and your mind and your anger and your, you know, all that stuff. You're avoiding the negative things. You're taking up the positive things. Now what can you do? Yes, now you can associate with other living beings. If you can't control yourself, you can't associate with anybody else, right? And a leader in our movement and I were recently discussing about people who have a certain particular kind of material attachment. And this person was saying to me, well, what do people do if they just can't control their strong desires? And I said, people who can't control their strong desires, their strong sinful desires, have to be in jail. Right? And if not physical jail, then a social jail. If people don't know how to behave properly, then they're either, if it's really severe crime, then they're behind physical walls, and if it's minor, then at least a society avoids them. Isn't that a fact? Every society does this. So if you want to associate with society, first you have to have yourself together. Which you're supposed to be trained like that when you're a child. So now that you have your control over your mind and senses, you've given up the negative, you've taken on the positive, now you can associate with other people. Now you're qualified to be in a society. And what are you supposed to do in that society? The six loving exchanges, which involve basically three different kinds of things, which are gifts, prasadam, and confidences. So give and take. I give you something, I accept what you give. I give you prasadam, I accept prasadam. I reveal my mind, I accept when you reveal your mind. And the greatest gift to give is the holy name. Yes. Okay, now how do I know how to do this? Do I just give equally to everybody? Do I give in exactly the same way to everybody? So the next thing is I have to discriminate. Which is a really bad word in modern society. Well, everybody does it. Who doesn't do that? I mean, does anybody just leave their door open and let anybody who wants to walk in their house? Everybody discriminates. So we discriminate according to whether a person is. What are the three? Kanista, which means not nista. Majjhima, which means middle. And Uttama. We had several definitions of Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama. Can anyone remember some of them? Degree of faith. Especially degree of faith in the Shastra. How much faith does someone have? Other definitions. Spiritual advancement, can you define how would you judge that?
According to the stage, what a spiritual development, what is that?
You're talking about Shraddha Suprema?
Yeah.
What other criteria are given for Kanista to Uttama? Okay. I was just reading, Prabhupada said the preaching is so relishable and sweet that the Uttama comes down to the Majjhima platform to preach. But it sounds like you're also describing degrees of faith. The Kanista can be swayed by others, the Majjhima can't always convince others, but they're convinced, and the Uttama, they're always convinced, and they can convince others. What did Rupa Goswami say in the verse? How do we tell Kanista, Majjhima, and Uttama? Yes? The quality of their relationship with other devotees in Krishna. That's specifically described in the... Where is that definition given? I mean, Prabhupada gives it in a purport, but he's referencing 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Okay, so that's the Kanista is, you know, oh yes, God's in my place of worship. But he isn't any place else. So, you know, God's in my, in the Baptist church, but he isn't in the Pentecostal church. He's in the Sunni mosque, but he isn't in the Shiite mosque. Right? He's in the Hare Krishna temple, he isn't any place else. So this is where God is limited to this, my temple or my particular sectarian understanding. And I don't know how to treat other living entities. So at the grossest platform of Kanista, like the Kanista, so they worship God and they shoot anybody who doesn't worship God the way they do. So they have no regard for other living entities. A little higher than that, maybe they're not shooting people, but they're shooting animals. So, yes, Lord, Lord, Lord. Now let's go down and have a beef supper downstairs in the church. So that's Kanista. God is in my place of worship, and I don't know how to treat other living entities. And a little higher than that is like a little higher Kanista, like the Uttama Kanista. Is, okay, I recognize that God may also exist outside of the temple, but I think that my devotional service is criticizing other Vaishnavas. That the way I can serve Prabhupada and Krishna, the way I can really help ISKCON, is to write as many critical articles as I can about as many devotees as possible and distribute it as widely as possible. Yes. So I don't know how to deal with other living entities. And Majjhima loves God, helps the innocent, makes friends with the devotees, and avoids the demon, and not avoids the demon out of pride. Not like, well, I'm better than those demons. But avoids the demons out of humility, thinking, I don't have the power to help them. Like Advaitacharya was praying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you please come to earth, because I don't have the potency. Although he's Sadashiva, Kshir Dakshina Vishnu, he's taking that mood. And the Uttama just sees Vijayavanaya Sampane Brahmane Gavihastani Suni Chai Vasupake Cha Pandita Samadarshina. He just sees everyone equally, and he sees that everyone's engaged in Krishna's service except for himself. All right, we still haven't gotten to Rupa Goswami's definition in his verse. What was his definition in the verse? Although all these others were mentioned in Prabhupada's purport. Okay, the Kanista is someone who's even chanted once. And the Majjhima? Yes, Diksha. Taken second initiation and is engaged in worshiping the deity. And the Uttama? Who's completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. Of all the things Rupa Goswami could have said to indicate who's an Uttama, it's nice sometimes to meditate on why he picked that one. All right. So, he's told us how to discriminate, and then the next verse he tells us how not to discriminate. He says, don't discriminate based on the body. Even a vulture can be a devotee. You all know the vulture devotee? Jatayu. So if a vulture can be a devotee, there's hope for all of us. Don't discriminate on the basis of the body. And we talked about in that class how one of the things, the most extreme things that repulses us is usually someone who has some severe deformity. Remember we talked about that? And he's giving that as the example. He said, even if somebody is severely deformed and sick and, you know, they've got oozing sores all over their body, that's not a disqualification. What to speak of the color of their skin, their gender, their nationality, their age, their etc. Those sort of things, how much education they have. All right, now we've gotten all that together. So, we've controlled our senses. There's a reason I'm going through this whole thing. First of all, good teachers are supposed to review. Second of all, at least half of you missed those two middle classes. And third of all, there's no way we can understand these last three verses if you don't have that other stuff together. See, a lot of people go to these verses and just say, oh, Prabhupada says, Rupa Goswami says, go live at Radha. Couldn't take shelter of Vrijvasi. Okay, I'm going. Get my home in Radhakund. Have you noticed that there's a lot of people from all over the world in Radhakund? Anybody been to Radhakund? No? It used to be, when I first went to India, I got more stares than when I was in the West. Before my first trip, I thought, I'll finally go someplace where people won't stare at me. You know, because in the West, they stare at me because I've got tilak and sari. And I went to India, they stared at me worse. I remember when I went to Mayapur, we had to stay at the Goshala, which meant we had to brush our teeth outside and all that stuff outside. But it was also an entrance for people into the property. So all these Indian men were watching me brush my teeth, you know. It was like, I really brush my teeth the same way you do. But anyway, now in Vrindavan, it's not like that anymore. Nobody stares at you in Vrindavan anymore. It's become a completely international cosmopolitan place. You might as well be, you know, on Oxford Street, practically. Nobody takes any notice of you. And you're there in Loy Bazaar, and you're going to hear Russian and Polish and Mandarin and Spanish and, you know, every language in the world you're going to hear in Loy Bazaar. And it's more that way in Vrindavan than in Radhakund. But also in Radhakund, nobody notices you anymore. You know, you're white, you're black, you're green, whatever. They don't really pay any attention. Unless they pick you out as a tourist, in which case they'll try to sell you some tilak and mud beads. But my point is, there's a lot of people living in Radhakund now from all over the world. And many of them think, I'm going to go there and take shelter of Rijvasi. All right, so that's why I'm doing this, in case any of you are thinking, why is she doing this? All right, so we have all this down. You're controlling your senses. Okay? Senses are controlled. Use them the way you want them to use them. That's a nice thing, isn't it? If you're in a car, wouldn't you want it to be under your control? Anyone ever be in a car that went out of control? I don't know if you ever have ice here, but I've been in a car that spun out of control in the ice. And years later, an astrologer said, you were meant to die at such and such time. I said, oh yeah, I remember that. So it's scary to be in a car that's out of control. First, you've got to get your body and your mind under control. Otherwise, who knows where you're going to go? So first, you've got to get some self-control. Give up the negative. Accept the positive. Then you can be part of society. You can associate with people. Then you can start having discrimination. Who's a fit person to associate with? I tell on the basis of internal advancement. I don't tell on the basis of body. Then what can we start talking about in text 7 and 8? Then we can start talking about what? What did you say?
Chanting.
Then we can really start talking about taking up the process and making solid advancement. Of course, that was spoken about in text 3. But then once you have sense control, you give up the negative, you accept the positive, you associate properly with devotees, you discriminate properly who you should associate with, then you can start making advancement. Then you can start really chanting, which at first is going to be very bitter. At first may feel very bitter. Oh, I got to chant 16 rounds. Why do I have to chant 16 rounds? A number of times when Prabhupada was asked by devotees, why do we have to chant 16 rounds? Why do we have to chant japa at all? Why can't we just do other services? No taste. And what was the essence of all advice? Text 8, one of the most important texts anywhere in the Shastra. What is the essence of all advice? 24 hours. 24 hours. I just read a really nice little essay by Satchinandan Maharaj. Maybe many of you don't know him. I guess he doesn't come to this part of the world very much. But he was talking about the qualification for attaining Krishna, and he was quoting some conversations and purports with Srila Prabhupada. He was saying, you know, the qualification is this eagerness and always thinking about Krishna. Generally, we're always thinking about ourselves. How am I going to get the clothes I need? How am I going to get the money I need? How am I going to get this I need? How am I going to get that? How am I going to deal with this person? How am I going to deal with that? And if we're very attached to another person, we may be thinking about them. Oh, I wonder what my child's doing right now. What's my mother doing? How's my friend? How's this person? How's that person? Or sometimes people are very absorbed in some celebrity. You know, what's this football star doing right now? And how many of us are thinking, I know, just like myself, I have friends and relatives now in every other time zone in the world. So sometimes I might think, okay, well, it's such and such time in London. What's this friend of mine doing? But how many of us stop and think, well, let's see, 8:30 in the morning, what's Krishna doing? I wonder what Krishna's doing right now. I wonder how he is. How's everything going for him? Is he warm enough? Did he get a nice enough breakfast? So usually I'm thinking, am I going to get a nice enough breakfast? Am I warm enough? That's generally the way I'm thinking. By the way, during the pastime of Brahma stealing all the cowherd boys and the cows, Sukadeva Goswami asked, why was it that everyone became so attached to Krishna when Krishna expanded himself as all the cowherd boys and the cows? The parents became more attached to their child when their child was Krishna as they had to their own child? That doesn't generally happen. I'm not going to get more attached to your daughter than to my daughter, right? That would be odd. And Sukadeva Goswami answered, he said, everyone is most attached to themselves. And generally we think of ourselves as this body. Like we were saying in the beginning, we think of the best place to live. We think, where is going to be a nice, safe, comfortable place for my body? So generally we're thinking the self is the body. So we're thinking about the self. And a little more advanced, one thinks about the soul. But Sukadeva Goswami says, Krishna is the self of the self, the param atma. Atma atmani. He is the super self. And therefore, this attention to the self is most properly given to Krishna. Just like all of us care about our family. Right? Everybody cares about their family. If you don't have husband and wife, you care about your mother, your father, your sisters, your cousins. Even if you don't get along with them, still you care about them. Right? But most of all, you care about yourself. You know, tighter, tighter, tighter. And Krishna is the self of the self. So 24 hours a day thinking about Krishna. That is the essence of all advice. And that is Krishna consciousness. The purpose of all of our activities is to bring us to Krishna consciousness. And without attaining Krishna consciousness, all of our activities are useless. Shama evahi kevalam. All right. Now that I've attained this Krishna consciousness, that I'm thinking of Krishna, that means Krishna's name, Krishna's form. It doesn't mean how to smash the other devotee in the Hare Krishna movement. That's not what Krishna consciousness means. I can't tell you how many devotees try to argue with me that that's what it means. Someone just did that to me a few days ago. Way I'll be Krishna conscious is, you know, by philosophically defeating all the people in ISKCON I think are wrong. Krishna consciousness means to be absorbed in Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. And his pastimes include our preaching. That's also absorption in Krishna's pastimes, which depends on one's particular motive. But to be absorbed in thinking, how am I going to bring people to Krishna? That's Radharani's mood. How am I going to bring more people to Krishna? Very different from the mood of a lady in this world. The lady in this world doesn't think, how can I get my husband to marry more wives? Not generally. Even in the time when polygamy was allowed, most women didn't think like that. But Radharani's thinking, how can I bring more and more devotees to serve Krishna? And that's the mood, of course, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we're part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So meditating like that is also thinking of Krishna. Of course, I say it depends on our motive, how much that's thinking of Krishna. So once we've done that, we've come to a higher level of consciousness. It's like we've all experienced, that when we came to the Krishna consciousness movement and started chanting Hare Krishna, that our perception of things changed, didn't it? I felt it was as if I didn't know that I needed glasses. Like, I can see all of you pretty well, which is why I don't wear these all the time. But boy, when I put these on, whoa! All of a sudden, the details become sharply defined. Now, because I can function well enough without these glasses, I might never know that my vision was sufficient. And if I was born like that, which I wasn't, I got like that when I got old. If you're born like that, you might never know that your vision is defective. So when you start chanting Hare Krishna, following the process, all of a sudden it's like putting on glasses and saying, oh, I couldn't see before. Now I could see. Even that Christian said, like, I once was blind, but now I see, right? It's that famous, what's the name of that song? Very famous Christian hymn. Amazing Grace. Yes, thank you. I once was blind, but now I see. And that Suri Das sings like that. A deaf person can hear, a blind person can see, a lame person can cross over mountains. That means literally, but he's also talking about going from sleeping to wakefulness, coming to a higher level of consciousness. So the best people and the best places, the criteria for determining that is level of consciousness. That's the criteria. And to get to a higher level of consciousness, you have to... Text 1 is... What's text 1 about? Being... control. Text 2 is about giving up... negative things. Text 3 is about accepting the positive things. Text 4 is about the loving exchanges. Text 5 is about discrimination. Text 6 is about how not to discriminate. Then text 7 is about chanting, how it cures the jaundice. Text 8 is about 24 hours always thinking of Krishna. If you missed that class and you haven't read that purport lately, read it about 5 times, please. Really important, like key instruction of Srila Prabhupada. If I've done all that and I've gotten through text 8, I come to a higher level of consciousness. Now, it's only at a higher level of consciousness that I can even discriminate on the basis of levels of consciousness. You know, if I'm half sleeping or practically like an animal, how am I going to tell what's the best place and best person by level of consciousness? I won't even understand what that means. All right, now we're going to do this in a slightly different order. Instead of doing text 9 first, we're going to do text 10 first. Because what Rupa Goswami's done is in text 9, he's talked about the best places, and in text 10, he's described why those are the best places. So let's go to text 10 first. And then go back to text 9 and then do text 11. All right. See, because each of these people have their place. Isn't it always like that? Different people have their place? We were talking about best place in the world, but it's also what's best for you. I mean, a lot of people might say Auckland's the best place or living here on the farm's the best place. But if you want to go out clubbing, then I don't think living here at New Marchand is the best place, is it? It's kind of boring. So best place depends on your consciousness. And there's different places. Goloka namni nijadam nijalei titasya devi mahesha haridam ashute shuteshu te te prabhava nichayabhi chastinena. There's different places for different consciousness. So first we have the vikarmis. Let me read some of the things that Prabhupada says here. He says that the karmis and vikarmis, that although they may be elevated to the heavenly planets, they have to return to this planet when the position of their pious activities are exhausted. This is the position of all karmis, including those who act piously and those who act impiously. He says, on this planet we find many businessmen, politicians, and others who are simply interested in material happiness. They attempt to earn money by all means, not considering whether such means are pious or impious. And it says the vikarmis are those without guidance of Vedic knowledge. Ishopanishad, of course, also talks about karma, vikarma, akarma. So most people we see today are vikarmis. Once on a morning walk, devotees were asking Prabhupada, will most people today take birth as animals? Prabhupada said, not necessarily. Many of them will become stool worms. So we have a modern society. People are wanting to become like animals. A friend just sent me a photograph of this man who wants to become a tiger so much. He tattooed his body with tiger stripes and filed his teeth to look like tiger teeth. And I mean, that's extreme, but people want to become animals. Why are they preaching this whole theory of evolution? What's their purpose? Just to say, we're nothing but animals. Why pretend to be anything else? So that's vikarmis. Now, among those, there are some who are engaged in karma. They're still selfish, but they're following the Vedic rituals. And Prabhupada says such karmis are superior to the vikarmis, for they are faithful to the directions of the Vedas and are certainly dear to Krishna. So, of course, Rupa Goswami also says that in the verse. Of all types of fruitive workers, he who has advanced the knowledge of the higher values of life is favored by the Supreme Lord Hari. So sometimes we in the Hare Krishna movement look down our noses at pious people. But here Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada are saying that Krishna is very pleased with them. At least they're following the Vedas. They're trying to live a pious life. And of course in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, if you can't love me, do Abhyas Yoga. If you can't do Abhyas Yoga, work for me. You can't work for me, at least be a philanthropist. At least give in charity, give up something, sacrifice something, cultivate knowledge. So such people are very dear to Krishna. Krishna is very happy that they're doing that. Just like the teacher is very happy with the little child when they form their first letter. Right? When Devaki Nandan said his first word, his parents were very happy. They didn't say, oh, you're not speaking in full sentences yet. Useless. Right? A little progress is very desirable. So then among the karmis are the gyanis. Gyani means somebody who sees that this material world is useless. Material life is useless. But they don't have something positive. They don't have something higher. So of course, when somebody who's really a gyani takes to Krishna consciousness, then Krishna says, look, the four people that come to Krishna, right? You know the four people? One who's distressed, they're trying to get rid of their suffering. One who wants to increase their happiness. One who's curious. And most of us come because of one of those or some combination of that. And then very rare is someone who's seeking after knowledge. So one of the devotees here was just asking me yesterday if I knew of any mystic yogis, and I ended up meeting another one yesterday. And he said, yeah, you know, I was born with awakened kundalini and I regularly pop in and out of the Brahmajyoti. And I've subtly traveled all over the universe. And I decided I want to be a devotee of Krishna. So that's rare. That's a real jnani. You don't find many of those. That's very, very rare. In the Hare Krishna movement, I've met a handful of people like that who were previously Brahman realized. Of course, it's very hard for such people to become devotees, even though Krishna says they're the highest of the neophyte. Klesho dika tarashtesham avyakta saktatejasam avyakta higatir dukam te nivadvir vapite. Why? Because such people have made their hearts very hard. So this devotee was telling me, he said, it's very easy for me to sit down and chant 50, 60 rounds a day. But I was sensing this hardness. I said, that's interesting. Then he started telling about himself. I said, ah, another mystic yogi. Somebody who can sit down and chant, you know, 6, 7 hours a day and has difficulty softening their heart. So those are the jnanis. And they're certainly more elevated than the even pious karmis. They don't have any interest in the world. They want something transcendental. They want something spiritual. We're talking again about very, very rare persons. You won't find it in very many real jnanis. Most of the people we call jnanis are just curious people. They're not really detached from the world. All right. That they've come, as it says here, they've come to the platform of knowledge, atmatattva. They know who they are. At least they know their soul. They may not know I'm Krishna's food or I'm, you know, whatever, but they know I'm a soul. They actually know that. Not like someone who just comes to the movement and says, oh yeah, I'm not this body, I'm a soul. But they've realized that. What this person was telling me yesterday, he said, I don't just believe this stuff, I know it. I've experienced it. Right? That's a jnani. Then much higher than the jnanis are the bhaktas. Jnani is also dangerous because sometimes you can think that you're God. Or you get dissuaded by your powers. You know, like this person and most other jnanis I've met, they can read other people's minds. Right? Sometimes, like Prabhupada said, he met this yogi when he was a little boy who could grab a mango from another country. So you can get distracted by that. Oh, no, I'm very powerful, which is the whole problem in the first place, wanting to dominate material nature. Actually, they talk about like raising the kundalini, which is shakti, and connecting it. I'm saying this because I know some of you guys preach to people like this. Connecting it right at the top of the head, which is bringing it to Shiva. And what does Shiva represent? The false ego. If you're connecting Shiva and Shakti instead of connecting Radha and Krishna, you're actually solidifying the whole purpose of coming to the material world. Your whole concept of I'm the enjoyer. That's the domain of Lord Shiva, and the ahankar. So much higher than that are the bhaktas. Even if the bhaktas can't pop in and out of the Brahma Jyoti or read people's minds or live on sunlight or any of those sort of, you know, get mangoes from another part of the world, they're much higher. Why? Even if they're higher, even if they're just vaidhi bhaktis, even if they're just following the rules and regulations, even if they're at a very low platform of devotional service, still they're higher. Why? Because they're starting to cut to the root of the ahankar. They're starting to develop factual good qualities. We were talking about this at the loft, right? Good qualities? You're reading that list of good qualities in the 12th chapter. And what were we saying was the root of all good qualities? Do you remember? That's the 13th chapter. That's the beginning of the process of knowledge. One can't gain knowledge without humility. Good, but what's the root of all good qualities? In order to have good qualities, you have to be what? Do anybody remember? Oh, try. It's all right if you get it wrong. Surrender. Okay, if I surrender to Krishna, then I become what? If I'm really surrendered. Fearless. I become fearless. Prabhupada said, no one should take sannyas unless they're already fearless. Why is fearlessness, or courage, why is that the root of all good qualities? That's what we call the tipping point. Let's say you have a really good quality, you're very honest. You really pride yourself on being honest. But then you're in a situation where you lie, not to save somebody's life. Why do most people lie? They don't want to get in trouble. What's that based on? Fear. You understand? So I can be truthful, 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 truthful. And as soon as I'm in a situation where telling the truth gives me some fear, then I'm not truthful anymore. Does that make sense, everybody? I'm kind. And as soon as I think, if I'm kind, I'm going to get hurt. As soon as I become fearful, then I'm not kind anymore. Therefore, manovratena. The non-devotee is on the platform of the mind. And they don't have any really good qualities. Why don't they have any really good qualities? Because one has good qualities only as long as it benefits me. And as soon as I'm afraid that the good quality doesn't benefit me anymore, it's out the window. So if I'm 100% fearless, if I have 100% courage, then I will have good qualities in all circumstances. Therefore, even someone trying for that courage, even someone trying for that abhayacara nadavindare, trying for that fearlessness is superior to somebody who can pop in and out of the Brahma Jyoti and pick mangoes from Afghanistan. What to speak of someone who's just trying to be a nice person in the world? Because even that beginning devotee is on a different level of consciousness. They're striving for full fearlessness. Then among all the devotees, who is the best? And of course, Sanatana Goswami goes through this in the... before I go to the best devotees. Okay, we'll read something here about the jnani. Just a jnani is considered superior to a karmi because he at least refrains from the blind activities of sense enjoyment. However, although a jnani may be liberated from the ignorance of the karmis, unless he comes to the platform of devotional service, he is still considered to be in ignorance. Interesting. Ignorance again, because the jnani is still on the platform of ahankar. So then why is the devotee, among all the devotees, right? Of all these devotees, the gopis are considered as superior because they do not know anything other than satisfying Krishna, nor do the gopis expect any return from Krishna. Indeed, sometimes Krishna puts them into extreme suffering by separating himself from them. Nonetheless, they cannot forget Krishna. When Uddhava came, the gopis were saying, let's just stop talking about Krishna. And they said, unfortunately, Krishna may stop talking about us, but we can't stop talking about him. And the gopis particularly, if you think about a paramour love, which of course in this world is very abominable, but this parakiya rasa, you're not getting any return. Normally, if a woman's in love with a man, she expects that he's going to marry her, at least in civilized society. He's going to marry her, he's going to maintain her, he's going to give her children, he's going to take care of the children, he's going to stick around. He's not going to say, okay, you know, and I'm tired of you, bye-bye. She expects she's going to get something back, and if she doesn't get something back, she complains. What are you doing just lying around on the couch? Watching the basketball game. You're supposed to be earning a living. Why are we on the dole? What kind of a husband are you anyway? Isn't it? And in some countries, it used to be anyway. The woman could even go to the village elders and complain. My husband's not giving me children. He's not maintaining me. He's not giving me a nice house. But in paramour love, the woman doesn't expect anything. So the gopis didn't expect anything. I mean, if Krishna gives them a present, the wife expects presents. It's our anniversary. You forgot our anniversary. You forgot our anniversary. But if Krishna gives the gopis presents, it's awkward for them. As explained in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, you know, Radharani was wearing this necklace that Krishna gave her. It was a little too big for her, and she became very embarrassed. What do they get? Is Krishna giving them a home? Money? Children? He does give them gifts, but they have to hide them. They can't wear them publicly. You know, again, married woman, she comes to the festival, look at my new sari. Oh, that's so beautiful. Yeah, my husband gave that to me. Isn't he a good guy? And the gopis can't do that. Nothing from Krishna. The wife, you know, she expects the husband to hang around. At least in Vedic society until he's 50, and then he better make some arrangement for her. Can't just leave. Krishna just leaves. Just leaves. And still they love her. That's the highest form of bhakti. Like that demon Vrikasura, when Lord Shiva didn't show up personally, he was going to cut off his head and jump in the fire. And Prabhupada said, the devotee is confident that Krishna is accepting his offerings. We're not thinking, okay, Radhagirihari, I've served you for so many years. Can you manifest yourself to me? Hey, you know, can you come and talk to me? No, whatever. You talk to me, you don't talk to me. You come, you don't come. You leave me to rot in this world. You take me back to God. Whatever you want to do, I'm still going to love you. That's following in the footsteps of the gopis. You can't imitate that in this world. I can't have a relationship with someone in this world and just give, give, give without an expectation of reward. It doesn't work. You'll fry. Because we're not really feeling that way. especially women sometimes try to imitate that. Just give, 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 and then one day they blow up. And the poor guy thinks, what did I do? But the ultimate love is like that. Now, therefore, the gopis are the hearts. And that is why the Parakiya Rasa is this highest expression of love. And not only that, there's no difference between thinking of Krishna and associating with him. Rather, Vipralamba Seva, thinking of Krishna in separation, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did, is far better than serving Krishna directly. Oh my goodness, so not only are they selfless, but they're thinking of Krishna in separation from him. What kind of love is that? Who wants to be separated from their beloved? Anybody want to be separated from their beloved? But as Sanatana Goswami writes in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he said, the devotees in Vrindavan, they don't want to go to Krishna with Krishna to Dwarka. When they see Krishna Kurukshetra, they don't say, we're going to come back with you to Dwarka. They say, come back to Vrindavan. Come back to Vrindavan. Come back to Vrindavan. And they stay in Vrindavan without him, and he says, the happiness of being in Vrindavan separated from Krishna dances on the heads of all other happiness. This, of course, was the mood of the Goswamis. Hey, Radhe, Vrajadevi, Kaya, Lalite, Hey, Nandasana. And Prabhupada said that we, members of the Hare Krishna movement, should cultivate this mood of separation, which is pretty easy to do, because if we're conditioned souls, we're right now feeling separated from Krishna. And you know, all of our suffering is due to the fact that we're feeling separated from Krishna. So when you're suffering in this world, if you think, I'm suffering because I'm separated from Krishna. I wish I was with Krishna. I wish I was with Krishna. Where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? Where's Krishna? What's he doing now? What Krishna's doing now? What's Lord Chaitanya doing now? What kind of things does Krishna do? Where is he? When will he come back? Oh, I've heard this thing about Krishna. I've heard this thing about Krishna. That's Vipralambasana. And then of all of the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the hottest. Srimati Radharani is the most selfless. No concern for herself, only thinking how to make Krishna happy. It says, even Krishna cannot understand the attitude of Srimati Radharani. Her total surrender, total selflessness. All right. Now, according to different levels of consciousness of these different people, we're going to go back to text 9, there's different places. So here Rupa Goswami doesn't even bother talking about the material world at all. So he is not going to talk about the places for the karmis, the vikarmis, and the gyanis. The vikarmis, of course, where do the vikarmis live? The lower planetary systems, where a lot of them live on the Earth planet in Kali Yuga. And the karmis? Where do the karmis live? Here, and where do the karmis live? Heavenly planets. Okay, where do the gyanis live? In the Brahmajyoti, or? With Lord Shiva. Or some of them that aren't that advanced live on, like Gyanaloka, Tapaloka, Mahaloka, live up there. The higher heavenly planets in the universe, like with the four Kumaras and the nine Yogindras. So some of them live there, some of them are in the Brahmajyoti, some of them live with Lord Shiva. All right, so we're not even talking about the Vikarmis and the Karmis and the Gyanis. We're starting above Lord Shiva's abode with Vaikuntha, and he says higher than Vaikuntha, where everyone's a devotee and everyone has this mood of just loving Krishna selflessly. Higher than that is Mathura in the material world. So this gives us some indication, Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the Supreme Godhead and his wonderful activities, his childhood activities, are sweeter than his activities of king in Vaikuntha. And then we're going further and further into Mathura. Like Mathura's in Vrajmandal, further are the 12 forests of Vrindavan, where Krishna is displaying all of his sweet pastimes, sitting with his cowherd boyfriends and eating lunch with his left hand, without anybody doing a formal offering of sacrifice. Lord Brahma was very astonished. How can this be, my Lord Narayana? They're just throwing him, hey, take my samosa. Or as Prabhupada says, that Krishna's mother packed samosas and kachoris and ladus, and the other cowherd boys, they just pack rice and dal and chapatis. And when Krishna gets to the field, he gives the cowherd boys his kachoris and ladus and samosas, and he eats their rice and dal and chapatis. So such sweet, sweet, sweet madurati patera kilama madurati. Such sweet activities, right? Or with Mother Yasoda. He gets angry when she puts him down to tend to the milk on the stove. You're supposed to be feeding me. Breaks the pot, feeds the monkeys. Holds onto the tail of a calf and gets dragged through the clay and the cow dung. Steals the clothes of the little gopis when they're bathing and climbs up in a tree. Says, oh, you've offended Varuna. You have to Anjali, you have to put your hands here on your head. Oh, Krishna, don't do this to us. He says, now you come, take your clothes. So this is the 12 forests of Vrindavan, very, very sweet. And then, sweeter, 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 is Govardhan Hill. Why? Krishna touched it. Of course, Krishna's touching all over Vrindavan with his feet. The marks of his footprints are all over Vrindavan. And even though, like Nanda Maharaj has 900,000 cows, they're careful to walk around Krishna's footprints. And when Krishna became all the calves, he was even eating all the grass of Vrindavan. Just imagine. But still, Govardhan Hill, he picked up Govardhan Hill, right? And in one sense, all of Vrindavan is Krishna, or sometimes it's explained all of Vrindavan is Radharani. Like Krishna likes to accuse Radharani of being a thief, you know that? He says, why are you stealing the flowers from my Vrindavan? It's my Vrindavan. And then Lalita says, no, Radharani's, the whole forest is her. Can't you see her beauty in all the aspects of Vrindavan? And Krishna says, oh, then she's really a thief. She's stolen all the beauty of Vrindavan and put it in her own body. So all of Vrindavan can be described as Krishna or as Radharani. But Govardhan Hill, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill and he directly manifests as Govardhan Hill. Is explained, I think it's in the Garga Samhita, that in the spiritual world, the Govardhan Hill is a manifestation of the bhav of Krishna's heart. The Radharani says, I'd like some nice place for pleasure pastimes, and from his mood of love in his heart, Govardhan Hill manifests. And of course, Govardhan Hill is filled, and today we don't see this so much. Govardhan Hill is filled with caves and waterfalls and fruit trees and covered with gems. And you know, if you wanted to design a perfect pleasure park, so that is Govardhan Hill, and then sweeter, 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 sweeter are the two eyes of Govardhan Hill, Radhakund and Shyamakund, which are Radharani and Krishna themselves in liquid form. Prabhupada says here, Srila Rupa Goswami has given much stress to Radhakund because of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire to find it. So this is how we know what's important. What's important to God? Who then would give up Radhakund and try to reside elsewhere? No person with transcendental intelligence would do so. Aha. Interesting statement. And then at the end of text 10, Prabhupada says something similar. Therefore, everyone interested in Krishna consciousness should ultimately take shelter of Radhakund and execute devotional service there throughout one's life. This is a conclusion of Rupa Goswami in the 10th verse of Upadeshamrita. And then going on to text 11, Rupa Goswami recommends that even if one cannot live permanently on the banks of Radhakund, he should at least take his bath in the lake as many times as possible. This is the most important item in the execution of devotional service. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura writes in this connection that Radhakund is the most select place for those interested in advancing their devotional service in the wake of the lady friend Sakis and confidential servant maids Manjari of Srimati Radharani. So just again, relating back to text 8, we notice that there's a certain class of devotees that say everybody is supposed to become Manjaris. You've heard this? So here it says Sakis and Manjaris. Please don't boycott the Sakis. And of course, in the previous purport to text 8, the description was there of all of the rasas, the flute, the sick, the flowers, right? Remember that? Servants of Krishna, parents of Krishna, friends of Krishna, and the Sakis and the Manjaris. Krishna likes variety. Don't you like variety? Don't you like having different kinds of relationships with different people? You don't want to have exactly the same kind of relationship with everybody? With the speak of Krishna. All right. Whoa. It is recommended that one should live on the banks of Radhakund and should be absorbed in the loving mood of the Lord. One should bathe there regularly and give up all material conceptions, taking shelter of Sri Radha and her assistant gopis. If one is thus constantly engaged during his lifetime, after giving up the body, he will return back to Godhead to serve Sri Radha in the same way as he contemplated during his life on the banks of Radhakund. This brings us back to text 8, which is all about the mind. And where Prabhupada starts off saying, Yam Yam Vapi Swam Bhavam, Tvaja Cham Tekale Ram, Tam Tam Eva Tikanteya, Sadatad Bhava Bhavita. Whatever you think about, you become. That's like the essential core of our philosophy. What you think about, what you're hankering after, what you're attached to, that's what you become. We were just reading in the 13th chapter how we have some desires, some thoughts, and the Lord gives us a body. That's the gross manifestation of that desire. So if we're always meditating on serving Radha and Krishna, we get our spiritual body to continue that service. All right, does that mean, okay, that's it, finish with the new Varshan. Close it down. Everybody get on a plane. Let's all go to Radhakund, sit there, bathe every day, as many times as possible, like 10 times a day maybe. Skin would turn into a raisin, I think. And just meditate on the Astakalila. Is that what we should do? I mean, that's what it says in this purport, right? Did it say that? Did I just read that? It said that, right? Didn't it say that? It did say that. Okay, it did say that. So how come we're not all doing that? I guess we're all really in Maya, right? Why aren't we all doing that? I want to ask you a question. Prabhupada wrote that purport, right? Did Prabhupada ever live in Radhakund? Did Srila Prabhupada ever live in Radhakund? He went there, but did he ever live there? No. He did live in Sevakund, but he didn't live in Radhakund. What about Rupa Goswami, who wrote these verses? Did he live at Radhakund? He didn't go there very often. He lived at Terkadamba, and he also lived at Sevakund. Now, where are some people who lived at Radhakund? Who lived at Radhakund? Krishna Das Kaviraj, when? How old was he when he went to live at Radhakund? Like 90-something. He went to live at Radhakund, actually right by the bank of Shamakund, and that's where he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he lived right next door. He had it just like, I have a lovely next-door neighbor. Is she here? So Krishna Das Kaviraj had a lovely next-door neighbor. Who was his next-door neighbor? Raghunath Das Goswami. And Raghunath Das Goswami also lived there, actually right again by the bank of Shamakund, right near the Sangram. When did Raghunath Das Goswami move to the bank of Radhakund? After what happened? After Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left. So Raghunath Das Goswami lived in Jagannath Puri. That's one reason that he was the neighbor to Krishna Das Kaviraj. Because he was telling Krishna Das Kaviraj, every day they'd speak together for 3 or 4 hours about the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Puri. Because Raghunath Das Goswami had been right there in Jagannath Puri, seeing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that was, of course, also the diaries of Swarup Damodar and Murari Gupta were the basis for the writing of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Raghunath Das Goswami was serving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Jagannath Puri until he was, I'm not sure how old Raghunath Das Goswami was, but he was probably at least 40, 50, something like that. And then he came to Radhakund, and he lived there. And of course, he took on the responsibility because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given the Goswamis an instruction. He said, excavate the lost places of Leela in the Vrindavan area. So Raghunath Das Goswami was there doing that business. He had some specific service to do. Jiva Goswami spent some time there. He has a bhajan kutir there. And actually, Jiva Goswami took the main managerial role as far as excavating the kunds and things of that nature. But we don't find that many, for example, Gadadhar Pandit, who is none other than, who is Gadadhar Pandit? Srimati Radharani herself, he never visited Vrindavan during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's manifest Leela. Nor did Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was, of course, Lalita. They never went to Vrindavan. And we found, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to live in Vrindavan originally. And then out of love for Sachidevi, he instead lives in Jagannath Puri. But we find that, right, he tried to go to Vrindavan once and turned back, and then the other time he went, I'm not sure. Anyone know how long he stayed in Vrindavan? Not so long. So how is it that we then live at Radhakund? Again, why did I spend most of the time of this class going through the whole rest of the Upadeshamrita? Because I'm trying to be a good teacher, because some of you weren't here. And because before you can take up this instruction, you have to take up all the other instructions. Right? Does that make sense? And you can look at a university catalog, it will tell you, this is what you do your first year. Do you call it freshman, sophomore, junior, senior? Or do you have other names for it? You have other names for it. You all look very blank. Okay, so you have the things you do in your first year. What is she talking about? The things you do in your second year, your third year, and they're different. They're not the same. This living at Radhakund, this is one's internship. You don't do an internship till you've done your basic coursework, now do you? You don't go to medical school, okay, first say, okay, add on your internship. First you take the courses, then you become an intern, then you become a resident, then you can practice that on your own. And to take, what does it mean to take shelter of a resident of Vrindavan? So let's say for us, now maybe there are some people here who are already on this platform. I don't want to offend anybody. But in general, for the members of the Hare Krishna movement, how is it that we live at Radhakund? In our devotional service, what is the mood of Radhakund? What is the mood of Srimati Radharani? What is her mood? What is her mood? She wants to bring people to Krishna. That's her mood. What is the best thing one can offer Krishna? I know he says, Patram pushpam palam tayam yami bhakti prachititadaham bhakti paritam ashwini praitatmana, give me leaf, flower, fruit, or water. But what is Krishna like best? Not to eat. But what is he like? What's his favorite offering? Jivas. He wants the family to come home. Aren't your parents or grandparents like that? Aren't they like that? Don't they want the whole family to get together? Some family reunion, right? Somebody's birthday party or wedding or something. Oh, cousin Sam couldn't make it. Oh, right? They want the whole family to be there. Isn't that how we feel? So that's how Krishna feels. He's missing us. Genuinely misses us, by the way. He's not hard-hearted. He's not like, oh yeah, those conditioned souls, they're opposed to me anyway, let them rot. That's not his mood. He's thinking, when are they going to come home? And he doesn't want us to come home and make a disturbance. You know, you don't want your madman cousin to come to the... There's some people you hope don't show up to the wedding. Isn't it? Some people, you sort of invite them because you're obligated and you're thinking, I hope they don't have the money for a ticket to come. So they don't want us to come when we're rebellious, but Krishna wants us to come. So that's Radharani's mood. You want to know how to live at Radhakund? That's how you live at Radhakund. What are the Goswamis doing? What are Radharani's confidential associates doing? They're writing books. They're distributing books. Interesting, isn't it? They're preaching. Oh, that's the mood of Radhakund. And the selfless mood. We're talking about the Gopi selfless mood. Cultivating that selfless mood. That's living at Radhakund. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati said some of the people who physically are living at Radhakund, they're living at Narakakund. They're not living at Radhakund at all. But that's how one lives at Radhakund. And how does one take shelter of a resident of Vrindavana? What does that mean? Following their instructions. So, can we all agree that Prabhupada is a resident of Vrindavan? So there we go. That's pretty simple, isn't it? The residence of Vrindavan here doesn't mean that, like, you just go to Radhakund and see the people at the Sabji Mandi. You know where the Sabji Mandi is? When you first enter Radhakund, you come in at the Radhakund road, the road from Vrindavan to Radhakund. You turn right. If you come in that way, there's two main ways to come in. You can come in from Vrindavan or from the Govardhan Parikram. So Govardhan Parikram, you come in past the Radhakunjabi Hari Temple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and right by the Radhashyama Sundar and Radhadamodar Temple. But if you come in, so you kind of miss the Sabji Mandi, and if you go on the Parikram, you never even hit the Sabji Mandi. But if you come in through the Radhakund Road from Vrindavan and you turn right and you go past the Gokulananda Temple on your left, and you meet the Shiva in the form of Kundeshwar. Some of you saw my show? My tour of Radhakund? I was thinking of showing that again this morning. It's too late. Anyway, then you go past Kundeshwar, and then your first view of Radhakund on the right is you also see the Sabji Mandi. It's all the sellers selling veggies. So taking shelter of a resident of Radhakund doesn't just mean you take shelter of one of the Sabji Mandi salespeople. And you know, and then some of the people there, like some of the beggars there, what can you say? They're not, you know, they're professional beggars, some of those people. Because I stayed in Govardhan for a few months, so you got to know some of the people. You see them out begging in the day, and then you see them, you know, when they're not begging. And Hare Krishna. It's a cheating scheme. So a resident of Vrindavan, ultimately to take shelter of the residents of Vrindavan, mean this one's following the footsteps, as we were reading before, in text 8. Taking shelter means I'm taking shelter of Krishna's flute, Krishna's stick. I was just reading this morning in Pajavali how Radharani's taking shelter of Krishna's flute. I'm taking shelter of Krishna's servants, like Chitraka, Patraka, or Raktakta. I'm taking shelter of Balaram, Sridham, or Sudham. I'm taking shelter of Nanda Yasoda. I'm taking shelter of Lalit and Vishakar. I'm taking shelter of Rupa and Rati Manjari. To take shelter of those people, one would first have to meet them. They'd have to be willing to talk to you. You'd have to have a relationship with them. So that's on another level. All right, and the final thing I want to say about bathing in Radhakund is sometimes there's controversies. Should we or should we not bathe in Radhakund? And some people say yes, and some people say no. So the first thing I want to say is follow your authority. So if your Guru Maharaj says bathe, bathe. If the Guru Maharaj says don't bathe, don't bathe. Follow your authority. There's one, I can't remember if it's a lecture or a conversation, it's a lecture, where Prabhupada says if you want to bathe in Radhakund, you have to be willing to do Dandavat Parikrama of Radhakund. So that's the qualification. It's not hard, by the way. Not like doing Dandavat Parikrama of Govardhan. And he says that Raghunath Das Goswami, he was not only was he bathing in Radhakund, he was also doing Dandavat Parikrama. He said, so if you want to be qualified to bathe in Radhakund, you should have that as your qualification. I'm not saying that's the only qualification. I'm not saying the only way you can bathe in Radhakund is you have to do Dandavat Parikrama of Radhakund. I'm just saying Prabhupada gave that as an example of what kind of qualification one should have to bathe in Radhakund. When you go there, you see people who are doing Parikrama of Govardhan, barefoot, who are not usually walking around the world barefoot. And guess what they do when they get to Radhakund? They're putting their feet in the water. Very typical. You see people who are coming from various parts of India, they're doing Govardhan Parikrama, they get to Radhakund, they sit, and they put their feet in water. So one has to have proper adhikar to bathe in Radhakund. All right, so we'll take 1 minute just to go through everything again. Text 1 is? Text 2? Text 3? Okay. Text 4? Text 5? Text 6 is how not to discriminate. Text 7 is? Text 8? Okay. Text 9 is better places. Text 10 is good, better, best persons. And text 11, best place, Radhakund. So I hope that you enjoyed this journey through the Upadeshamrita. 11 verses that take you from sense control to Radhakund. So from the very beginning of human life to the summit of devotional life. You're welcome to keep these handouts, and a lot of these handouts are the grace of Srimati Devi Dasi, who used to live in Mayapur and now lives in Vrindavan. And we want to thank, he's not here today, but Agahanta Prabhu is the one who asked me to do these seminars, so if you're happy with him, you should thank him. And the handouts were all made on the school's photocopier with the school paper and stuff. So if you'd like to give a little donation to the school for the use of their materials, that would be lovely. Okay, we'll take at most 5 minutes. Questions? Yes?
In the prepared text 11, Srila Prabhupada, you read it, and Srila Prabhupada says that.
You have everything on that little thing?
Yeah.
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
After giving up the body, he will return to back to God and serve Sri Radha in the same way as he contemplated during his life in the banks of Radha. Does that mean that one can create their own rasa just by...
Thank you. That's a very good question. So his question was that Prabhupada's saying that you'll do in the spiritual world however you contemplate serving here, does that mean you create your own rasa? You always create your own rasa. Your rasa is an expression of what you want, but that is eternal. So that's a very difficult thing for us to understand. How can I choose something that's eternal? Because choose means to me there's some point in time. Which would mean like at some point there was nothing, and then at a certain point I chose, okay, I want to relate to Krishna in that way. But that's eternally how I choose to relate to Krishna. Just like this body is an expression of how I choose to try to enjoy the material world. I have a certain way I want to dominate material nature, and according to how I've demonstrated that desire by my karma, I get a particular body. So my rasa is an expression of my particular love for Krishna. And we know devotees, of course, can exist in more than one rasa simultaneously. There are devotees who are existing in dasya rasa with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and madhurya rasa with Krishna at the same time. That's also there. Some people are in Ram Lila, Chaitanya Lila, and Krishna Lila. With each different forms and different rasas. So what does this exactly mean? Prabhupada here is talking about someone who's already realized their swarup. In order to get to the point that you're dealing with this purport, you've already woken up to who you are. There's different kinds of sadhana. We say that the sadhana bhakti goes up to the stage of bhava, but even in bhava, bhava is the sadhya, but it's not the sadhya. And even Prabhupada says in the Krishna book that after this life, one goes to the planet in the material world where Krishna has his pastimes to get further training. So once one's realized one's swarup, there's still training. And a simple material example is, you know, you're a little kid, and most little kids don't know what they want to, you know, what they want to be, we call it. As if your occupation is your identity. I mean, some 3-year-olds say, I want to be a doctor, and they become a doctor. But most little kids don't know what they want to be. So you reach a point where you say, I really want to be an engineer. I realize that I'm an engineer. Then there's still some practice after that realization. So Prabhupada's talking about the practice that happens after awakening. Not that as a sleeping soul, I think, oh, I think I'd like to be a flute. And so I meditate on being a flute. That's not very helpful. In fact, that's a major distraction. Or another example is just like, you know, what do little children know of boy-girl romance? So if some 5-year-old says, oh, I'm in love with Sally, what does it mean? It doesn't mean anything. So first you have to mature, then you can start thinking of developing a relationship. You can't, the point of childhood has no meaning. So in a sleeping condition, thinking, well, I'd like to be a cowherd boy, or I'd like to be a saki, or I'd like to be a flower, it's childish. It's exactly like some little child saying, I want to be a fireman. I want to be a nurse. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, It could be that sometimes it's the same. It's not relevant. Is that all right? Okay. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.